This episode is brought to you by Pine Melon. Pine Melon is a next-generation grocery delivery app that partners with over 200 local farmers, ranchers, and producers in Colorado to help make fresh, locally sourced foods available to the Denver community at fair prices. And this month, Pine Melon is celebrating Earth Month by highlighting their commitment to sustainability. They keep their supply chain efficient to help reduce carbon emissions and offer same-day delivery to help reduce food waste. And as a special thanks to CityCast listeners, you can use the code CityCastDenver for $75 off your first order. That's Pine Melon, the farmer's market delivered.
Today on CityCast Denver. Ballots are out and the mayor's race is hot. But what about city council? There are several runoffs that could seriously shake up our local government. So who are these candidates and what do they stand for? Producer Paul Caroli joins me to figure it all out. Today is Thursday, June 1st. I'm Bree Davies, and here's what Denver's talking about. Hi, Paul.
Good morning, Bree.
Did you vote yet, Paul, in the runoff?
I have not. As you know, I am a last-minute voter. I think vote late, you know? It's okay if we get the results late. That's a better storyline for us. That's more content for us.
Lord.
And I know our listeners love the content. But also, it actually is important. I think, and this is just a debate me and my wife have had for years. She's definitely a vote early person. And I respect
that. Right, Megan, because she worked at the clerk and recorder's office, Paul.
She did. She got indoctrinated to their pro-elections message. But yeah, I'm a late voter because I think you never know what's going to happen. You never know what's going to happen the day before. You know,
like
what news is going to come out that might change your mind.
That's fair. I mean, I don't have a council race at stake, which is what we're talking about today. And actually, neither do you.
That's true.
So we just have the mayor's race. But for folks that have a council race at stake, this is a pretty interesting runoff because we've got quite a few candidates. So we're going to go through each of those races. But before we get there, we're just going to talk a little bit about what city council does, because I think it's a fair assessment to say a lot of folks don't necessarily know. It's like the mayor gets the most attention, but council and the mayor's office have to work in tandem on a lot of things, and they make a lot of daily or weekly decisions that influence or impact the city. So we have 13 city council seats. Three are currently up for grabs in this runoff. Paul, high level look, what does city council do?
Well, city council is really important function of government. I mean, like you mentioned, they work very closely with the mayor. The mayor is probably the most important elected official in Denver. Denver has what's known as a strong mayor style of local government. So, like, relative to other cities, our mayor has more power. But council's job is to check that power. So what they can do is they can adopt or reject the budget that the mayor sets every year, which is the main way that the mayor sets priorities for the city. But council can also make laws. They're kind of our legislative branch. So you might remember a couple of years ago, this big whole to-do about vaping, our kids vaping, you know, nicotine, chemicals. I don't remember the exact specifics, but one member of council, Amanda Sawyer, decided this was a problem, and she proposed a ban on the sale of vape juice in the city of Denver. So she convinced a majority of her colleagues to pass that. Unfortunately for her, Mayor Hancock then vetoed it. Now, city council had the opportunity to override his veto, but they weren't able to get enough support. They would have needed 9 votes of the 13 seats to override his veto. So that's just an example of how it works on city council, how the sausage gets made.
City council also passed the urban camping ban. So just, it does have pretty big implications sometimes.
Oh, yeah. Huge amount of power on city council.
What's the current state of city council? Like, what are we looking at? Because we're looking at a big transition here. It's not just that we've got these folks in the runoff. There was quite a few folks that were term limited and some folks that decided not to run for a third term.
This is a time of great change for Denver City Council. So these are 4-year terms, and a lot of those terms actually were up this year. So we're going to have a whole new city council. In the past 4 years, the dynamic has kind of been there's 12 council members that generally agree with each other and like to work with each other. And then there's this one council member on the far left, the only, you know, democratic socialist member of council, a firebrand progressive, Candy Sedabaca. We know her as the lone no vote. So that's been the dynamic, is this big majority and then just her pushing forward her left-wing priorities. But all that's going to change because Robin Kenich at large is out. Debbie Ortega at large is out. Chris Herndon, District 8, is out. Jolynn Clark, Kendra Black, they're all off council. Now, there still are five members that are going to stay on that won their seats a couple of months ago. This is Amanda Sandoval, Kevin Flynn, Jamie Torres, Amanda Sawyer, and Paul Cashman. We also elected three new members of council back in April. Diana Romero Campbell won in District 4, and then the at-large seats were won by Sarah Parody and Serena Gonzalez Gutierrez. That leaves four new members to be decided next week. Now, one of those is a specific situation, which I think we should probably start with, but all four of these are very interesting in districts 7, 8,
yeah,
9, and 10.
Yeah, for sure. I think the one that we're going to talk very briefly about is District 7, which was between Flor Alvidrez and formerly Nick Campion. But what happened in that race, Paul?
Well, that was a wide, wide open race. So no candidate got 50%. So we did go to the runoff. But the second place finisher, Nick Campion, he decided like 2 weeks after the election in April that he didn't want to do it. He didn't even want to try. Something about his wife was pregnant and they wanted to raise their kid outside of Denver, which we talked about quite a bit at the time.
Plenty.
And, you know, barf. But Flor Alvidrez will win as a result. She will be on city council. She hasn't technically been elected yet, but she will win. And if anyone doesn't know about Flor, she's a really interesting person. First generation Denverite, grew up in her district, daughter of a Mexican immigrant who worked in construction. She is the part owner of her family's concrete company, and she runs a real estate business. And that seems like a really big priority for her, is helping out small businesses. So on key issues like housing, her main priority when she's coming on to council is going to be to remove regulations and to streamline the permitting process, and also to allow ADUs, accessory dwelling units, in her district. That's her approach.
District 7 was formerly Jolynn Clark, who decided not to seek a third term. What I find interesting about Flor is that she's from the neighborhood, and she really represents what I think of when I think of a lot of my neighbors, folks that work in construction, folks that run small businesses. So I'll be interested to see what she brings to the table in council conversations around that.
Well, she says that specifically, too. That's been a main aspect of her messaging, is that she wants to be the first candidate from this district from the west side of I-25, from your side of the highway. Clark and a lot of her competitors in the first round and many previous council members from this district were all from the other side, which is like the maybe a little bit wealthier, a little bit more affluent, a little bit more, whiter side of the district.
Yeah, for sure. I think District 7, like many districts, encompasses so many different neighborhoods in terms of economic diversity as well as cultural diversity. So I have to say I am excited about Flor for that reason, is like just hearing from someone who's from Athmar Park who might have a little bit different perspective. But yeah, I think it's going to be cool. I'm curious to see what she does.
But that new race, voice, for sure.
Like we said, that race is kind of a moot point. It is on the ballot, but Flor is going to be the one. So
let's get into the good stuff.
Yeah, let's get into the races that are up for grabs.
We did 7. Now we're going to do 8. This is Chantel Lewis taking on Brad Revere. And District 8 is sort of in the northeast part of the city, Central Park, Northfield, that area.
So each neighborhood can be a little bit different. So we're looking at Montbello, Central Park, parts of Park Hill, and Skyland, which runs right along City Park. So we'll start with Chantel Lewis, former RTD board member. When she ran for that seat, I remember I had her on my old podcast. Her big thing was lived experience. So she's a bus rider. She currently works for the Colorado Coalition for the Homeless. She's really big on housing. Her approach is social housing, looking at different ways that the government can own housing, as well as just expanding the affordable housing stock in general. She has some really interesting ideas around partnering with RTD and DPS on workforce housing. So figuring out how to integrate housing to these other systems that we look at, education and transportation. She is part of that progressive left slate that we were kind of talking about earlier. Candice Zabaka is currently the only member on council at this moment who sort of is part of that group. But Sarah Parity, who's coming in at large, was part of this slate. Shannon Hoffman, who we'll talk about later, is on this slate as well. And I would say that's like probably the biggest difference here between these candidates, because in reading up on them, they're very similar in their approaches, I'd say. Yeah. They're both really big on housing. So let me finish off a little bit more about Chantel. This is the neighborhood, or this is the district that had the Park Hill Golf Course in it. I thought that was an interesting thing to look at for these candidates.
Yeah, where'd she fall on this?
She said no on lifting the conservation easement. So she was a no. And she told the Denver Post, "I'm committed to the messy middle and working with all parties going forward." She was against the current ownership plan, but is still interested in doing something there.
Interesting.
Yeah. So she also supports expansion of the STAR program. I have to say, as a person that's been covering the STAR program since before it began here in Denver, the evolution of leadership being interested in it has been so, frankly, kind of cool to look at and watch.
And so fast, like years,
fast.
Like maybe a couple of years between this is a glimmer in someone's eye, you know, there's doing some cool stuff in Oregon, let's check that out, to unanimous support. Like, I can't think of a single local politician that is opposed to expanding STAR.
Yeah. And I mean, I love that, because we're going to talk more of that in these other races too, around the public safety conversation. So that's really where STAR comes in, is for a lot of folks that are not necessarily anti or pro police, this is like a good middle, right? Mm-hmm. It's an addition. It's an addition to policing that has different implications on how the STAR program interacts with folks who call 911 for help.
Right.
In different situations. So she supports the STAR program.
Tell me about Brad Revere.
Yeah, again, very, very similar. I think the biggest difference here, too, is he's really supported by the businesses in the area. He runs Colorado Succeeds, which is a nonprofit group of business leaders who are working on education issues. He also is a transit guy. He was on the mayor's pedestrian and bicycle advocacy committee. So he's really about transportation equity. What I find, like, again, it's very small differences here. Chantel's really on public transit, and he talks a little bit. He talks about that as well, but he's also on pedestrian infrastructure and bicycle infrastructure. He also supports affordable housing, ADUs. His thing was community land trusts, which I thought was interesting. Also supports the STAR program. And so the interviews that both of these candidates did for the Denver Post, which asked them the golf course question, was asked in March. So this was pre-vote. Pre-vote, Brad said that he did support lifting the easement. So he was in support of the development of the golf course. So I think that would be the other place. Yeah, that would be the main difference where these two candidates landed. But I would say they are pretty similar on most issues in their district.
Okay.
For sure.
This episode is brought to you by the Museum of Outdoor Arts. Because on Sunday, April 28th, the museum is hosting La Primavera Festival, a celebration of spring, to kick off event season at Marjorie Park. La Primavera Festival is a family-friendly event inspired in part by the Gaelic Bealtaine celebration and European May Day, marking the beginning of summer. And the star of the show is really something special. They're premiering the latest permanent installation by local artist Lonnie Hansen. It's called The Cabinet of Curiosities and Impossibilities. Hansen describes it as an enchanting homage to English curio shops, featuring a collection of relics from fairy tales and nursery rhymes that tell stories about early optics, geometry, magical tools, celestial wonders, and more. The festival includes a pancake brunch, live Celtic music, maypole dancing, flower crown and basket making, yard games, and a bar for adult beverages. Tickets are available now at moaonline.org. That's moaonline.org.
This episode is brought to you by ShipStation. If you run an e-commerce business, you know how much work it takes to produce something great while dealing with complicated shipping issues. That's why over 130,000 companies have turned to ShipStation, an innovative tool that allows you to focus less on shipping and more on building your brand. With ShipStation, you can manage orders, label printing, reporting, and customer service on one easy-to-use dashboard. You'll reduce warehouse costs with reliable enterprise solutions and save thousands on shipping costs with discounts up to 89% off. Plus, you can effortlessly import orders from everywhere you sell online. So, turn your shipping challenges into opportunities for growth. Go to ShipStation.com and use code POD to sign up for your free 60-day trial. That's ShipStation.com, code POD.
Next up, we have District 9, which is sitting council, the incumbent, Candy Sayathabaka, against Daryl Watson. Paul, tell me about District 9 and the race.
So District 9 is the most interesting race on the ballot for sure. It was very tight in the first round. There were three challengers. I think there were a lot of people who thought that Daryl Watson and the other main challenger, Quan Atlas, were going to maybe split the vote and that Candy would be able to hold on to her seat. Not the case. Quan Atlas did not win a lot of votes. A lot of the opposition to Candy, you know, we talked about how much she's sort of been alone on council, but that meant a lot of opposition has formed around her, formed against her. So that opposition is consolidated around Daryl Watson. He won 42.9% of the vote in the first round. She won 44.2%. So very, very close. And that's really the story here is like Candy is this left progressive firebrand. She unseated one of Hancock's, Mayor Michael Hancock's closest allies on council 4 years ago, Albus Brooks. And ever since, I think his supporters, developers, more of the like establishment type power centers in the city have been waiting for an opportunity to support a candidate to take her on. So he was the biggest fundraiser of all the city council candidates through the whole cycle. He's got endorsements from people like former Mayor Federico Pena, former Governor Roy Romer, current council members, Debbie Ortega, Chris Herndon, Jolan Clark, as well as Denver firefighters. As for who he actually is and what he supports, I did not know much about him. Candy Sayathabaka is such like a big personality and like so interesting and fun to pay attention to. I never really dug into who Watson is, but I learned that he's one of these guys that's like on a zillion committees. He's been on dozens of like city and state committees, parks and rec committees, housing equity committees. But professionally, it seems like his job is a communications consultant. He's the co-founder of the Watson Wenk Group. And one of the things that they will offer if you contract them for their services is they'll make you a Justice, Equity, Diversity, and Inclusion Action Plan, or JEDI, a JEDI plan, Bree. So Daryl Watson is a nerd. He is going to be another one of our Colorado nerds on council if he wins. That's the impression I have, at least. But as for like the other policy differences or like what they support, again, pretty similar. They both agree on expanding STAR. Watson says he wants to be collaborative with police. That's a difference with Candy. She's definitely more
that's
critical.
A big difference.
She has been a champion of police reform and has consistently kept up calls for that since the summer of 2020. On housing, both focus on housing affordability. Watson supports the affordable housing measure that requires developers to pay into a city fund that we passed last year. Candy really focuses on that lower band of the AMI, the area median income spectrum. She's focused on stopping displacement, stopping gentrification, and supporting the members of or the people who live in her district that have been affected by those trends.
And I think it's interesting to note that this District 9 has changed a little bit since redistricting, since Candy was elected last time. Mm-hmm. This district no longer involves or includes downtown Denver.
Yeah, I think that's actually a huge factor here, too, because Candy, based on the map of how the votes went down in the first round, Candy won a lot of her votes up in the north part of the district in Globeville, Elyria, Swansea, whereas the closer you got to downtown, Daryl Watson seemed to get stronger and stronger. The more affluent, the more closer to the power centers, that's where Daryl Watson was. So I bet if it's still included downtown, I don't know, maybe he would have an easier road here, but that does not seem to be the case. I think this is going to be a close one.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's the most interesting race in this runoff. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
But we've got one more to talk about. Bree, District 10. Yeah. You want to tell us about District 10?
Sure. It's incumbent Chris Hines against newcomer Shannon Hoffman. District 10, again, the redistricting conversation. This district covers downtown, Cap Hill, the Country Club neighborhood, Cheeseman Park, Bel Caro. I mean, we're talking, again, wide variety of incomes. I think the most interesting thing to me that's showing itself in this race is the renters versus owners kind of conversation.
Okay.
Shannon Hoffman is, that's her biggest platform to me, other than this, she's really been vocal around repealing the camping ban. She's very against the sweeps. But the other big thing is tenants' rights. She's really run this platform like she's a renter. She doesn't feel like renters are equally represented on council and in city conversations in general. And I think that's just an interesting conversation if we're looking at a Bel Caro versus a Capitol Hill. Very different. Shannon, also, again, a political newcomer. She's part of that progressive slate of candidates we've been talking about, endorsed by the Democratic Socialists, DSA. She's been endorsed by Working Families Party and some union organizations. I think her biggest criticism of her challenger, Councilman Hines, is that she says he's beholden to developers and doesn't listen to his constituents. He's kind of pushed back on that and said Well, we'll get more into what his side of it is in a minute. But I think there's a really big thing here that's also different is that she, when it comes to public safety, she is a self-proclaimed abolitionist. And she told Denverite that that basically means to her diverting money from police toward other departments to respond to public health issues.
Right.
So that's kind of where she stands.
Okay.
Oh, and also she supports safe injection sites, which I think is an important conversation because this district would be downtown, which is where a lot of that issue tends to rear its head.
Well, talk to me about Chris Hines. Maybe let's start with the safe injection sites. Do you know where he stands on that?
He does. He said he'd defer to state legislators. He's basically not taking a position, but also just saying whatever the state is doing is working, which currently is a big no on safe injection sites. Mm-hmm. So when it comes to Hoffman's criticism of Hines about building and developer, she says he's the developer-backed candidate. During the 2020 protests, he was very vocal about defunding the police, but he has since changed his mind and says he wants to expand STAR, but wants to also expand police staffing. I thought the most interesting thing to me was that he was endorsed by the Denver GOP, as well as, again, this is a nonpartisan position. These are nonpartisan races, but he was also endorsed by former Democrats or at least Democratic leaning mayors like Webb and Pena. Outgoing council members Kenich, Ortega, Clark, and Kendra Black have also endorsed him. Endorsements, I think, are so what you make of them, because it could to me signal, well, his former council members like to work with him, so they're endorsing him. But I don't know if that means anything if they've never worked with the new candidate, you know? So
hard to say.
It's really hard to say. But I think it's important information for folks because a lot of people do look to endorsements to help guide them.
Oh, absolutely. I was talking to a friend over the weekend about the Denver GOP's endorsement of Kelly Bruff. And this friend of mine said, well, that's my vote. I'm going to vote the other way because if that's what the Denver GOP wants, I want what they don't.
Yeah, I can see that. So it is interesting how partisan politics are involved in nonpartisan races, regardless of whether we want them to be or not.
For sure.
The other big difference here is he supports the sweeps, upholding the sweeps. So I think that would just be another. Again, I think the sweeps and safe injection sites are two big issues for this downtown district. So I think those would be the two big determining factors. But they both support more affordable housing. He's a really big advocate for pedestrian infrastructure. Folks will know he's a person who uses a wheelchair. So he's been an advocate around disability work, accessibility of spaces and things like that. So I think this is an interesting race. They're two pretty different candidates. But it wasn't super close. I mean, Shannon got 27% and he got 35%.
Yeah, she sort of eked into the runoff. There was a third candidate who also did quite well, who she beat by like a couple of hundred votes. So I think that you'd say that Chris Hines is still the favorite to win here, but you never know.
We'll see. So, Paul, what are you going to be looking at or paying attention to when we get to election night next week?
I think it's this last race for me. I mean, District 9 is obviously very interesting because Candy Sedabaca's got such a big personality. But it's this last race, and it's downtown specifically, because Hoffman and Hines do have very distinctly different positions on those key issues facing downtown. And this is a new... this is a new district for that area of the city since it's been recently redistricted. So I think what I'm going to be watching for is, where do the people of downtown vote? Are they going to vote for the Shannon Hoffman approach with the safe injection sites and the ending sweeps? Or are they going to vote for maintaining the status quo, as you might say, Chris Hines wants to do? Bree, how about you? What are you going to be looking for on election day?
I think this is the new narrative conversation. What is Denver's next step? What's our new narrative going to be? Who are going to be our leaders? What is that going to look like? So we're going to have a new mayor, but we also are going to have a very different looking council potentially. And I'm curious to see how the progressive slate shakes out. If Candy maintains her seat and we get these others that are on the slate with her, or if we go the other direction, I don't know. I think I'm just curious what the narrative about Denver will be in a year from now when we look back and go, oh, we saw this coming, or oh, we certainly did not see this coming. So it'll be really interesting. Yeah. Regardless of which way it goes in each of these races, we're going to have a different looking council, and I'm excited to see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, I think that progressive slate, like if they can really... make something happen here. It could be not the lone progressive vote, Candy Sedabaca.
Right.
It could be Sedabaca, Parody, Lewis, and Hoffman together. That's 4 out of 13. You know, that's a big block that you can make some real changes with.
Well, Paul, you should vote. Although I know you're not going to until next week.
I'll do it.
I'm going to vote tonight and drop it in my ballot box at Burnham Rec Center and let it go and let go and let voters decide.
It's almost here.
We'll see. Thanks, Paul.
Thanks, Bree.
Hey, Denver, it's Bree. I wanted to let you know that after we first published this episode, Councilman Chris Hines got in touch to clarify his position on safe injection sites. He said that once the state authorizes them, he would be, quote, honored to have a site in Denver. That's all for today here on CityCast Denver. If you enjoyed the show, why not take a minute to tell Nick Campion about us? Rate the show wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe to our morning newsletter, Hey Denver, by texting Denver to 66866. We'll be back tomorrow morning with more news from around the city. Bye-bye.
Well, District 9 is my favorite Neil Blomkamp movie. I wish he had ever achieved those heights again. That parable about South Africa and apartheid, just so beautiful, beautifully done, and a great action movie too. But I think you were talking about City Council. District 9, City Council. I know. We can... let me be real about this.